You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lopate. It's no surprise that Gully Wells became a travel writer and eventually the features editor for Condé Nast Traveler because wanderlust is in her blood. Her mother, the fashionable 1960s journalist Dee Wells, toted young Gully from New York to London to Provence, France, for a childhood most of us can only imagine, spending days on beaches with, in Gully's words, that eternal and irresistible combination of sun, sand, and sex, and evenings listening to the conversation at the dinner table between her parents' famous friends. Later, Wells left her family home in France to study in Oxford and eventually returned to New York City, where she now lives. In The House in France, Wells recounts these formative years, and her memoir is published by Knopf, and I'm pleased that it has brought Gully Wells to the show today. Welcome.
And I'm thrilled to be here.
You begin by describing very beautifully a trip that you take back to this house in France after your mother has died, mm-hmm. but it took you years to be able to go back.
It did. It did. It took me 6 years. I think because I associated that house so much with her. I really, really did. And I'd actually never been to the house without her. And I couldn't imagine it. I just couldn't imagine it. I thought it would upset me so much, so I put it off being cowardly. But when I got back, when I came back, I felt totally at home, and I was, you know, quite mistaken about my feelings.
Did you feel that she was there even though she wasn't there?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Because the house never changed. That was the thing. She bought it in 1963. And I don't think it's changed since then.
And you were a little girl then. So
I was. I was 12 years old.
This was where you grew up.
Mm-hmm. I went there every summer from the age of 12 to, you know, my 20s. And then I went back with my own children.
With your children.
Yes.
There's a wonderful scene that you write about in the book of going back with your children and having your mom show them a particular drawer in a particular desk.
Oh,
can you describe
God.
That?
Yes, I can. This is something she called the drawer of death. And it was a pretty little cabinet with some nice sort of china objects in it. But in the drawer were all these fearsome dead creatures that she collected, like little dead scorpions and moths and butterflies and the skeleton of a mouse and all kinds of horrible dead creatures.
Which would probably make her the coolest grandmother ever.
Absolutely. The children loved it. They loved it. They absolutely loved it.
And you write about looking for that drawer when you return.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I went back to the house, I knew that I had some of my mother's ashes. And I thought, yes, I found a little shell and I put her ashes, some of her ashes in the shell. And then I slid open the drawer and I put her in with her dead creatures.
You know, there's so many different things you could have named this book about. There's so many experiences that you write about, yet you chose to call it The House in France.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about that place, and perhaps as you explore this, what is it about places that connect with us so much?
Well, I think it's to do with having memories, don't you? It's all about memory. And my mother always called it the house in France. It had no other name. It was a ramshackle little old house. It was undistinguished in every way. But it was her. The house was her, and that's how I felt. And it was just full of, you know, 50 years worth of memories.
I know, for me, the house that I grew up mm-hmm. in is the house I dream about. Is that
Do
something
you?
That's still true for you, that that's a landscape of your dreams?
Absolutely. I mean, in those 6 years when I didn't go back, I used to dream about the house, but the house always was inhabited by my stepfather and my mother in my dreams. And, of course, it isn't now, but I still feel they're there.
As you were growing up, you lived in a variety of different places. You write about how from the time you were able to remember, your parents were divorced, mm-hmm. and so you were sent back and forth between them. Did this feel strange? Did you have friends who didn't live that way, or did this just feel was life?
Well, you know how children are. I think they're very accepting of the circumstances they're given. And actually, I didn't know anyone else who had parents like that. I really didn't. But it seemed perfectly normal to me that I was mailed backwards and forwards like a package. And I think what's most important is that I was loved and treated extremely well by both my mother and my father. And I didn't have to live in a dysfunctional family where they were arguing, because I don't ever remember them being together.
All of the photographs of your mother, it's almost like you can see the charisma coming off of the page.
Really?
That there are some where she's surrounded by men who are all completely transfixed by her. And I wondered what it was like to see her in that experience and to watch your mom being the center of attention like
well,
that.
Well, she loved being the center of attention, and she was very good at it. And men did find her very, very attractive. She wasn't classically beautiful in any way, but she had a beautiful body, and she just had something that, you know, turned men on, charmed them, and she loved it.
What was that like for you as a young girl watching it?
Oh, I admired her. I admired her, and I suppose wished to emulate her best I could.
When you were listening in to these conversations, because it sounds like the dinner table was quite extraordinary in your house, as a girl, was this something you felt you could participate in, or did you just kind of eavesdrop on
going on? As a child, I would eavesdrop. I mean, I wouldn't participate, really. But I loved being part of it but not having to talk. And that was sort of the role I played. I loved observing grown-ups and listening to them. But I didn't usually participate as a young child.
And you were an only child for a long while. And so it sounds like the world of adults was really your world.
Oh, absolutely. I was used to being surrounded by adults, and I loved it. And from a very early age, my mother used to take me to parties. And again, you know, I just loved watching them and learning from them. And I've always liked older people. To this day.
That's a good thing, I think.
I do like older people.
I am speaking with Gully Wells about her memoir, The House in France, which is published by Knopf. As you grew, your world was in so many different places, in France, in London, and now you live in New York. What feels like home for you now?
Oh, that's impossible to say, because I was born in Paris. And as a child, I went to Burma, and then my mother took me to London. And my mother and father were both Americans, but I grew up in London. So, and I've always had this thing about France. So I feel utterly at home in all three places. But of course, most at home in London and New York, because my French is not perfect and I don't have so many friends there. But all my life, I've been half American and half American and half English.
And your mother was a journalist, and you're an editor. How did she find stories? What was it that she was looking for as a writer?
Well, she was always looking for. She liked to stir up trouble. Very, very different from me. She loved to stir up trouble. So she'd look for a story that she could just rock the boat on, whether it was politics or it didn't really matter the subject matter so much. But she used to go on television a lot as well. And she was very, very argumentative and very witty. So she was perfect TV fodder. And she was actually, you know, couldn't believe she was paid good money to argue with people on television.
She must have been thrilled. And as a woman at that moment, too, there weren't that many on TV
God,
doing
no.
that.
And then she was very popular on television for that reason, exactly. And being an American in London, she could just take the piss out of the English. You know, God, you know, she used to swear like a sailor. So I can't believe, you know, the goddamn English. What are they doing now? You know, and that's her tack was always that, to be sort of the outsider.
And it's interesting you said that's not your way.
Not at all, no.
And so how about for you as a writer and as an editor? Mm-hmm. What do you look for in a story? What are you hoping for when you start a story?
Well, you know, I write primarily for the Condé Nast Traveler. So, you know, I'm digging into a place through its people, through its art, you know, through its history, through its food. I just love to get into it, try and convey to the reader a sense of that place. But I do a lot of research, and I travel alone a lot, mostly. And I love talking to people when I'm traveling. I just, rather like my mother, I do love gabbing. So I find that's, you know, one way to really get into a place.
And that's interesting that you travel alone. I've done a lot of that myself, too. And you get a different sense
that's
of a place.
Right.
Especially when you're a woman alone. There's that's something right. else that happens when you're there.
Oh, I think you get much more out of a place, if one can generalize, on your own. Because you don't have that other person to fall back on and get into the cocoon that you might have with them. You're forced out. And for working, I think it's much better.
And you're also not talking to someone about that third thing. You
yes,
are in it. You
that's
can't
it.
Step,
that's exactly
step away
it.
From it.
That's right. And in some ways, I prefer traveling alone.
When you began this memoir, was it something you'd been thinking of for a long while? It sounds like your mother was a very powerful figure in your life.
She was. And of course, I could never have written this book if she were alive. So, yes, I did think about it for quite a long time.
And is that because she wouldn't have let you, or would have
I would have been so constricted, you know. I don't know how you can write about a living person, really. No, I couldn't have done that. And I think she would have been quite upset about some of the things I said about her. Anyway.
But you'd been thinking about it.
I've been thinking about it for a long time.
Because as a writer, you knew this was an extraordinary story.
And I knew that my mother and my stepfather, who was this rather well-known English philosopher called A.J. Eyre, they did lead an extraordinary life in the 60s. I mean, there was good and there was bad in it. But I think that the laissez-faire aspect of the 60s and, you know, screwing around and all these kinds of things can be very, very destructive. But at the time, it was awfully good fun, and they thought so. And the damage caused, I think we can still see in some of us. But, you know, I was fascinated. And I partly grew up in that era too. You know, the 70s was sort of leftover of the 60s. And my stepfather always had, you know, many lovers, and my mother too. And, you know, they did lead, by most people's standards, by some people's standards, a rather crazy life.
For you watching that, did that, again, feel like this is just the way parents behave?
Of course. Absolutely. I thought it was perfectly normal. And I sort of still do, some of the people who've reviewed my book are somewhat shocked at my family. And I just can't understand that. They seem loving, charming, normal-ish people to me.
Well, and normal is what is normal for you in your own family. So that it often is something that we can't even imagine for other people.
I know. But I'm sort of amazed at other people's reaction to my family.
But growing up, you know, one of the things that struck me is that there are all these people who some of us read about, and these were the people who were sitting down to lunch in your house. And yet it doesn't feel like, oh, well, there was this person and that person. These were integral parts of the fabric of your life.
Are you talking about well-known people?
Well-known people, yes.
Yes, it's true. My parents were quite well-known at the time, and I don't know, but maybe well-known people attract well-known people. I guess that's what happened. Also, they loved entertaining. And, you know, my mother used to give amazing parties and invite, you know, her friends, you know, Jonathan Miller, Stephen Spender. I remember one time even Norman Mailer turned up with somebody. I don't know why. And that's, you know, she enjoyed mixing people up, what she was very good at, which I think is the key to a good party.
Her house sounds like it was so much. It was the place that became her for you. How did her choices in terms of how she created a home, how she, as you say, entertained, affect the way that you live your life now?
Oh, I was enormously influenced by her. And we used to go shopping for junk, used to call it junk, you know, antiques, not quite. But whether we were in France or in England, we'd always go around the junk shops. And she had a very good eye, and I learned from her. And I've inherited so many of her paintings and her furniture. And she was a good cook, not a great cook, but far more important than the cooking and making it all beautiful and nice was the mixture of the crazy neighbors with Stephen Spender, or, you know, she would mix anyone and everyone from all different walks of life, classes, ages, everybody. And a big table with lots of people around it, chatting. And, you know, that's my memory of the house.
Is there, and it sounds like that's something that you may try to do too in your own life.
Oh, God, yes.
What do you feel creates a space in which people from so many different places can come together and have a conversation? Because that's what it sounds like happened in her house, and perhaps in your house also.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it does depend upon having the courage, really, to take a few risks. I think people who plan parties too much and set them up too much
and have this person next to this person next to this person, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, even number of men and women. I mean, forget it. Just invite anyone you find interesting. Give them good food and plenty of wine. And I guess you do have to steer the conversation a bit. But not really. Not really. I think you should just let people do what they want.
Was the argumentative side of your mom on display at these parties as well?
Or oh, was God, that a, yes. yes. Now, well, no, here's the thing about my mother. She had a sort of funny argumentative side, which she used on the TV and entertaining. And then she had a very, very nasty argumentative side. She was very careful to keep that hidden from people because it really was unpleasant. So only her really close friends, very few of them, and her family were allowed to see the monstrous side of her, which really was awful. And it's quite, you know, looking back, she was quite frightening. She was quite frightening to me. But I learnt how to deal with her. But she was frightening to my brother as well, I think. And she would let fly sometimes with such venom, you just couldn't believe it. But the other side of her, I mean, she was the only person I've known who's occupied such a wide spectrum of characteristics. You know, she was super generous and kind and warm, and then the venom. And there was very little in the middle. It was very strange.
And I can understand then why it was difficult to begin to write about this until after she was gone.
Yeah.
Because you need to write about that whole spectrum. You can't just have one side.
And try and understand it too. I mean, she herself had a most terrifyingly unpleasant and crazy and violent mother. Mm. And I'm afraid these things can go from one generation to another.
What is it like for you? You have children.
Mm-hmm.
As you became a mother yourself,
mm-hmm.
what did you hope to be able to pass along to your kids?
Well, when I had children, it was very different from my mother. I wanted to devote myself to them as much as I could all the time. Quite apart, well, obviously, I had to work. But my mother was very, very different kind of mother. She was out. She was at parties. You know, she didn't have much time for her kids. And I was determined that I would be the total opposite of that. And so I guess that's what I learned from my mother, not to be too much like her.
Or to be yourself,
yeah,
which
to
might
be, myself,
be very to different be myself. From that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm, you know, I'm more of a homebody than she was.
As you wrote this, was there something that you thought, I'm not sure whether to put this in, but turned out to be something really important to have in the book?
No, I can't think of anything offhand. I did leave some things out to save people's feelings, which mm-hmm. I suppose if I was a really good journalist, I wouldn't have.
Well, I think memoir and journalism are two different
well,
things.
That's for sure.
So that it gives you that leeway. Were there things that you found out about your mother that you hadn't known before? Or understood her in a new way?
I think
way.
I understood her better. I don't think I found out any fact, but I certainly understood her better and forgave her more. You know, some people have criticized my book for being too sunny, too kind, too soft even. And why wasn't I more judgmental? I read in some English reviews that I should have been more judgmental about my mother. And I don't believe in that. I just put the facts out there as I saw them, and the reader can judge. And even one of the English reviewers took me to task for not being more judgmental about my first boyfriend, who was someone called Martin Amis, who dumped me. And, you know, hey, that was 40 years ago. Why should I judge him?
And I think we look back at the people that we loved mm-hmm. in a different way with 40 years of
Absolutely
perspective
right.
than had Absolutely. You written this 2 weeks after Martin Amis yeah. dumped you, it would have been an entirely
yes.
different story.
Yes, and I don't believe in judging people. I just believe in describing things. And then I think the reader can make up their own mind.
Well, it's lovely to speak with you about your book and your mother. I've been speaking with Gully Wells, who is an editor at Condé Nast Traveler and has written a book about her extraordinary experiences growing up called The House in France, which is from Knopf. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure.